You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Part of the reason that I'm standing here is that I'm the Methodist liaison officer in Jerusalem. I am normally living and working in Jerusalem and in the West Bank, and work closely with Dawood and his family and their struggle, their generation's struggle to keep their land. And we will hear from Dawood about how that's getting more and more difficult in the current situation. But let's just let's gauge where we are. For those of you at home, sorry, I can't see you raise your hands, but how many of you here have actually visited Bethlehem and Palestine and the West Bank? Look at that. Absolutely fantastic. Can I just say, from the people of Palestine, thank you. Because one of the great things is that when people come and visit, they feel a real sense of solidarity and support. And so those of you that have visited, you know, you've been part of that, and it's really important. Unfortunately, sometimes Palestinians feel a little bit forgotten. And especially when they see countries, you know, supporting what's going on. So your support by visiting is fantastic. How many of you here at the communion last year? It's like a primary school lesson, this, isn't it? I feel like I am suddenly back in doing a primary school. You'll remember that at the communion, we had Dawood and his family on the screen. Yeah? And I had worked with Greenbelt to try and get Dawood and the family here, and we'd almost got it sorted out. And then they felt they weren't able to leave the land. And I stood at the back of the communion field, and when they were on the screen, I'm not too much of a man to admit it, I actually had tears in my eyes. And I've told this story quite a few times, and everybody that was at that communion service have said to me, so did I. And it was just, I think, a special moment when Greenbelt and the Nasser family actually came together. And, okay, excellent. Came together and we formed a relationship. I've just been told, and that was so subtle, wasn't it? You probably all realised. I'm nothing if unprofessional. That we have Dawood, so maybe not. Okay. But we really felt it'd be really good to start off Greenbelt. Way!
Thank you,
Dawood, it's great to see you. I'm really glad because I was filling in very badly. So, Dawood, I was just telling a story from the communion last year when you and your family were part of our communion service. And we tried very hard for you to be here in person, but it was unable to happen. And then you appeared on the screen. And I was just confessing to the crowd here that I stood at the back of the communion service and I had a tear in my eye when I saw your family and listened to you speak. And I was just saying, and I got a few nods, that when I've told that story to people who were at the communion service, they said to me, we were crying too, because it was such a special moment. Hands up, people who were at that communion service and had a tear in their eye as Dawood spoke. Okay, I hope you can see the crowd, Dawood.
I can.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So we were just saying it was a special moment when we felt there became a real relationship between Greenbelt and between you and your family. So this is why we're so pleased you're able to be here on the first morning of the festival. And I just wonder if I could ask you, and I know it's a year is a long time and a lot happens, and it happens very quickly in the West Bank, but perhaps you could describe to us what's been happening for you, the family, the Tent of Nations farm, since you last talked to Greenbelt last year.
Yeah, thank you all for being in this session. And I am glad to speak to you via Zoom, but I hope one day to be in person there. As you maybe already know, the situation is getting more difficult, more complicated in terms of the expansion of the settlements and building new outposts. Generally speaking, in the West Bank, but also specifically in our area, the outpost that they started last year to build at the edge of our property is almost completed, So they continue to build houses there at the fence of our property, just like a few meters away from the fence. And of course, this situation will make it difficult for us. This is one thing. The legal issue on the other side is still like frozen. We haven't heard yet anything regarding the re-registration, but also and nothing heard yet about the construction of roads on our property that started last year. And now we went to court against these roads, but the next session is scheduled yet on the 18th of March 2026. So while everything is frozen legally, the facts on the ground are being created. The third issue that we are facing at the moment is the restrictions on movements from and to the farm, from Bethlehem and to the farm. So every day we have only one access road, which is the back road that is going through the villages, and we have to pass every day two gates that might be closed any time, and two flying checkpoints. And on the ground, we are of course are concerned about the increase of the settlers' violence in our area as well. So those are the changes that have happened in the last year.
David, thank you. Just while you were speaking, my co-host arrived. Someone who you know well, Reverend Sally Azar. So she's here with us. So I'm just going to take a moment to introduce her to the people gathered here, and then we'll continue the conversation. So it's great to be able to welcome Sally. Sally, come so people can see you. Sally. Sally is a colleague and a friend of mine. She is a Lutheran pastor in Jerusalem, and she always gets this introduction. We'll get it out of the way. But it's important, I think, to say that she's the first Palestinian woman to be ordained. So, Sally, this is your first time at Greenbelt?
Yeah.
First time in the UK?
All of it.
So you were here last night. Tell us, how does it feel to be at Greenbelt?
It's amazing. Like, it hasn't even started yet, and the vibes were amazing. So I'm looking forward to all the events coming up and meeting all of you. Like, it's great to have so many, also so many supporters, so many people talking about Palestine, because it's not that common to hear people. Talk about the word Palestine, because I don't hear it. And so since I arrived to the UK, there's been so much that I've seen in churches and here. And yesterday when we lit the Gaza Lighthouse, it was very emotional, and it was like, it was such a wholesome feeling to that all of it came together, that we feel connected as churches, because we didn't feel that for the last years. So thank you.
Thank you, Sally. Thank you. Sorry, David, for interrupting the conversation. You mentioned at the end of what you were saying about the threat of settler and settler violence, and I think many of us will have seen and been horrified with seeing some of the images that we've seen of settler violence, of seeing some people that we know. In places like Al-Khair, where people have been shot and killed. How does it feel for you as a Palestinian living with your land under threat to see this rise in settler violence?
Well, it is a very difficult situation for us, and generally speaking for all Palestinians, because we have no protection. Nobody is protecting us there. And that is why creating an awareness among internationals and the international community is very important. So we feel, for us specifically at the Ten of Nations, we feel that the international presence of volunteers at the farm is the only remaining protection for us at the moment.
So you mentioned international protection and volunteers. Tell us a little bit about how people could perhaps come, because they also, some of them said they would visit me when we were waiting for you, but I think even more might visit you, Dawood. So talk about how it's possible to come and to be a volunteer at the farm and to be part of that protection.
You know, before answering that question, I think what is needed right now in Palestine is the active solidarity, not the passive solidarity. And one of the things that people can help us with what I'm calling the active solidarity, is being there, being present there. We want the people to come and see, because this is the best way of education. Come and see, and we're expecting people to go back home and tell not only what they've heard, but what they've seen. And in our case, at the moment, at the farm, we have 15 international volunteers, which is the biggest number since years, I would say. People coming from Italy, from the US and Germany and other countries, coming together to be there to help. And age is not the problem. Like, we have people between 75 and 20 years old. So they are like all welcome coming to the farm, being there, helping with the work that we are doing. And this is what I call it here, the active hope, not the passive hope. You know, the active hope needs commitment, needs work, needs practice. And we feel that with the presence of internationals with us at the property, you know, the settlers' attack is less and less. So that is why I'm saying here, if you want to do something, please come and be with us. This is what we are asking you to do. And people can learn about volunteering at the Tent of Nations on our website, tentofnations.com. We have also Friends of Tent of Nations UK, so you can learn more about them and contact them. Actually, Dave is on the steering committee, and people are welcome to come for between 1 week and 3 months.
Brilliant, thank you. You mentioned their hope, and I might bring Sally in on this as well. I mean, I think sometimes there's always a question that visitors ask, and I see it when we have tours and visits that come through the Methodist Liaison Office. And one of the first questions people often ask is, where is the hope? And I think sometimes, I think it's easy for us in this country to see hope very superficially. But you mentioned that active hope. And I wonder whether you or Sally want to talk about perhaps what hope is like as Palestinian Christians, having lived under the occupation and the oppression for so long, and for seeing things to deteriorate and get so bad over the last 2 years. What does that hope look like for you, you know, as a person theologically, and how can you help us sort of understand what hope is in that Palestinian context? Sally, do you want to come in, and then we'll get something from Dawood?
Sure, I can start. Yeah, I would say hope is something that we would always say, that we all Palestinians carry hope within us. And it's, I would say the past years, especially, I think that was the first time when I encountered congregation members when they tell me, well, no, we don't have hope anymore. And everyone is fed up with the situation. Everybody is fed up with everything going on, that we are kind of numbed into our lives, living our lives daily. So it's a lot to carry. But the thing is, the hope that we carry within us does not go away, and that is the beautiful part of it, of being a Palestinian. That no matter what, we know that our hope lies in our faith. Because we still show up in our churches, we still come together and pray, we still do all of our daily lives, knowing that our strength lies in our God. And not like when we have God on our, in our prayers, when we have God on our side, we know that this is where our hope lies. So I would say it's in the people, we give each other that hope, and we carry that hope, and it is also carried in all of you. So we have also hope in the world, in our partners, in our churches. And this is something that, how I would describe hope these days for us as Palestinians and how we carry it.
Thank you, Sally. Feel free to applaud. Yeah. Dawood, anything to add to what Sally said about hope?
Well, to understand the meaning of hope, especially for us Palestinians, we sometimes have to touch the despair to understand what is really hope is. Because for us, it's the deepest point that we reach with despair, but then it's also the rising point up to that hilltop with hope. Now, some people think, well, hope is a passive thing, we hope tomorrow is getting better. We hope so. Some people think this is like a wishful thinking. But hope is more than that. Hope is an experience. Hope is you need to practice it. Hope you need to mix your hands in the soil. Like you need to be active. You need to do something. You need, of course, to believe in what you are doing. Faith is also very important in the issue of hope. But also, it's a movement. It's, it's something not just like staying somewhere and just like ask God to take over. No, we are co-workers with God on this earth. That means hope needs to become more active and not a passive one. That is why I always say hope is not just to pray at church that God will intervene in the situation and change it. Of course, it's very important, but God is also working through us. So if I am sitting down passively and doing nothing, this is not the kind of hope that we are talking about. It should be cultivated in us. It should be nurtured, and we should also be stubborn. Stubborn is, being stubborn in hope is very important. That is why we say, we cannot give up. Why we cannot give up? Because we have to be stubborn. We might not see the outcome of our work immediately, of this hope immediately, but it is a process. It's a learning process. It's day by day practice. And it's about a belief that in the middle of crucifixion, there is resurrection. In the middle of darkness, the light should shine again.
Dawood, thank you. There's just some wonderful imagery that you've shared with us there about getting our hands dirty in the soil, about nurturing, and that idea that actually not only is hope something that we can hold on to, but actually it's something that we create, that we get involved with, and we have to get our hands dirty to enable it to grow and to nurture. And so I just wonder, for whether you've got a message, and Sally also, if you've got anything to say, how do we here in the UK, those of us that gathered here, how do we go back to our churches, our communities, and how do we help sort of others get their fingers in the soil of hope for Palestine? What can we do here in the UK? How can we help build hope here that hopefully, Sally, you said that you get hope because of us. How can we make that happen? What can we do? We know we can pray, and we do pray, or at least I hope we pray, and I hope we pray constantly. But what else would you encourage us to do? Go on, Dawood, you go first.
Okay, sorry. I can say, first of all, I would say hope is in the soil. Like for us, what we are doing is planting this hope, cultivating the ground, planting the seeds. And this is something that all of us should be able to do in their own communities, like educating people about what is happening, trying to inform them, trying to encourage them. In our situation, we feel it's very important to do that, to do this kind of hope. Secondly, is I would say hope is in the non-violent resistance, because with all what is happening around us in our region, we feel sometimes in a desperate situation. Where is the world? Where is also sometimes we raise this question: what are people are doing in their own communities to stop what is happening here? So acting nonviolently is important sign of this hope for me. Hope is also like welcoming you to our tent of nations, but also to Palestine, to see, to come and see and learn from the people there, because I feel the hope is very strong when more hands are connected together. I always say with heart and hand, we should be able to heal the land, to heal the world. That is why it's important. This aspect of hope is very important for us. And one other thing is important is to be rooted in faith. This is the kind of hope that we are talking about, because hope and faith, and of course love, are all connected with one another. So we are all like brothers and sisters in Christ, and God asking us to be hands.
Okay, maybe Sally, can I invite you in at this point?
Because we've
Thank you, Dawood. We lost a bit of what you said, but what you did say is very powerful. So thank you. Sally, anything to add to that?
I would stress on to continue, if you're not doing it, to write to your prime ministers, to write to your governments, to continue to speak up against what Israel is doing, especially also, of course, in Gaza, but also in the West Bank, because a lot of people don't know what's going on in the West Bank. And especially all the attacks on the small cities, especially our Christian villages in Taipei and on Tent of Nations and all of that. It is important that people know that we also, as Christians, exist there, because I know that you know, but not a lot of people know. And so I would just emphasize on keep on stressing and pushing and demonstrating, because we all see that, and it does get us somewhere. And as also Dawood said, come and visit. Like, if we can be there, Dave and I and Dawood and all of us Palestinians can live there, you can come visit. And please contact us. Contact us as churches. We're happy to host you. We're happy to show you around. If you do not feel encouraged, we're happy to take your hand and to walk you with us in our daily lives, because it's not like showing you something extraordinary, but it's actually going through our daily life. Like just a few days ago, when I went through Bethlehem out to Jerusalem, I was stuck in traffic, or not traffic, stuck on the checkpoint for 1.5 hours because 2 checkpoints closed down because something happened in one of the settlement areas, I think a Palestinian was killed in one of the settlements or in around the settlements. So these things happen every 2 days or every day, actually. But it affects our daily lives. Like, I'm not able to go back and forth. Or if I get stuck in Ramallah for 7 hours last time on a checkpoint, I get discouraged a lot when I travel in Palestine. But I still go there again because it is my home. It is my hometown. And it would be great to share that with all of you, because I know I can tell you about it, but when you experience it, it's something different. It is. Then you can also share about your own experiences. And sometimes we just take things lightly because we normalize our lives in so many ways. And maybe now even Dawood, when he shares just a little bit of it, because everything else gets normalized and we don't even realize anymore what is normal and what is not. And I think this is important that you come, because you would show us what, you would remind us that, no, this is not normal, this is not your reality, and this shouldn't be that way. So I think it's, this is what happens when you come. It's a reality check for us as well.
Thank you, Sally. You know, Sally mentioned writing to Prime Minister, writing to our MPs. You know, there's all sorts of ways that we can get involved in non-violent action. You know, we can think about which products we buy. Are we supporting products from Israel? You know, are our churches investing in companies that are supporting Israel? These are things that we can do, and they are proven to be effective, non-violent ways to challenge occupation, oppression, and to challenge apartheid. So please think about that. Dawood, at the Tent of Nations, you have a chapel cave, and I want to just describe it, if I may. So in this cave, which is a chapel, in the center, there is a mural on the floor, and it is a picture of Jesus, and Jesus is breaking a machine gun over his knee. It is a fantastic image, and we regularly meet, and we share communion, and it's a very special time to be able to share communion in that chapel, in that place where we are sharing the bread and wine around this image of the non-violent resistance of Jesus Christ, of God in human form. I just wonder, you know, your phrase at the Tent of Nations, "We refuse to be enemies," is such a brilliant example of that way in which, as Christians, even though we suffer, we are not going to be enemies. We're not going to turn to violence. We are going to actually be non-violent in our resistance and continue to love. You've mentioned the word love. I wonder if, you know, you could just share with us a little bit, because if I'm honest, I don't know how you have struggled for 30, 40 years and you've held this mantra. I know I would have been got very angry and very aggressive a long time ago. Perhaps share with us how you managed to keep refusing to be an enemy, refusing to turn to violence.
Thank you, Dave. Well, it is not that easy. You know, of course, we are humans. We are people who sometimes feel down. You know, we start sometimes to have negative feelings, angry. Of course, this is part of the up and down journey. But you know, for us, we put four things in front of our eyes as our principles, because without them, we won't be able to continue that journey. The first thing we always say, and we continue to say, is we refuse to be victims. It is very important not to fall in the victim mentality. Secondly, we say always, we refuse to hate, and no one can force us to hate. So if the other is acting inhuman, the response should not be the same. So when we are acting differently, we force the other to see us differently. Thirdly, we need also our faith rooted in this way of resistance. So our Christian values are very important here. And fourth, continue in the middle of dark time to believe that that the justice will come, the justice one day will prevail. And the fourth way that we've chosen, which is we refuse to be an enemy, is not a passive, but an active way of non-violent resistance. It is a commitment. It's a commitment. It's not a message to anybody. It's a commitment, yeah, to ourselves to walk this tiny path without giving up. And the way we practice it is on the ground, because as you mentioned, it is not easy. Many times you are frustrated, but the therapy that we are practicing there is how can we channel our frustration, or how can we transform our pain, our anger, to get out in a constructive way. And this is really what we are practicing there. So refusing to be a victim is very important part, and refusing to hate is very important part in what we are doing. Yeah.
Bless you, my brother. Bless you. Just to say, we're going to have a chance for questions and answers. Wendy has some paper if people would like to have a question. If you've got some paper of your own, please feel free to write down. If you've written down a question, then please hold up the paper. And Okay, we've got a pad at the back. So if people have got their hands up wanting some paper, please write your questions down, hold up the paper, and our wonderful hosts will come down and collect them. Also, if you're watching at home, if you want to put a question in the chat, we'll be able to pick up that question as well. And we'll have a question and answer with Dawood and with Sally. So I've just been passed a message here saying that there are people who have volunteered at the Tent of Nations. Let's see who those people are. Who have volunteered at the Tent of Nations? One person here. Is there someone back that I can't see? People are pointing. Okay. Yeah, we've got another hand at the back there. So they're happy to talk to people. If you want to know a little bit more, maybe a little bit more about the practical ways in which you need to do, then the suggestion is that they're going to gather together at the back after this session. And then if you want to talk about it, please meet them and they will talk to you about that. Also, just to say, we do have the wellbeing team here. If some of what's been said or some of the answers to the questions, are troubling you and you want to talk to somebody, the wellbeing team are here to do that. So just as we're collecting questions together, Sally, just if I can ask you, you live and work in Jerusalem. Share with people a bit of what it's like to be in Jerusalem at the moment.
Well, for how many of you have been to Jerusalem? Well, awesome. I don't know when you came and what time, but it's always been very full, very lively. Nowadays, when you come to Jerusalem, it's very quiet. There's not so many people around. There are so many guns. So many settlers walking around with their rifles, a lot of more soldiers, more police. So that all has increased. So in the beginning, I was like, now I'm used to it, but when it all started or it all got more intense, I would say, like now almost 3 years ago, it was all very weird. Like I was not feeling safe walking around in Jerusalem. I was not, or still like sometimes walking around, and if I end up on one of the Jewish quarters and so on, it's not a comforting feeling, because I would know if I speak Arabic or if they know, like I'm usually also wearing my collar, they know that I'm a Christian. But not a lot of people understand that a woman wearing a collar means she's also a pastor. So a lot of people are learning, however. But all of that, when walking through the old city, it's just a different kind of feeling that I'm in my hometown, yet I don't feel safe to even be myself. And I really don't know, like sometimes even sitting in cafes or anything where settlers are just sitting right across of me with their rifles, and I'm like, okay, what if it goes off? Or if I'm walking down the street, and what if this gun goes off now? And a lot of things happen in the old city. A lot of times you hear gunshots or anything, and you don't know until later, because it's just, there's no reason for killing a child who was 7 years old a year ago in the old city, just because he was in the shop that sells sells Palestine maps or anything like that, because this is what they're tracking down in each of the shops. Everyone is scared to do their own thing, to be themselves, to say that we are also here in Jerusalem and Palestine. So it's not, I would say it's never easy, but I got used to it now. I got used to all the walking through the old city where it's empty. I got all used to seeing all the guns walking around. I get used to checkpoints sometimes in the old city because they have to check your IDs randomly. And all of that, like, I think there's so much that has changed and has more intensified and has more made our lives, more and more difficult to be there. There are new laws, new things that you need to submit more papers, because if there you don't have one paper, they can just say, yeah, no, you cannot stay in Jerusalem. So it's a lot, and I'm trying to realize now what has changed or what is not normal anymore, from my perspective. But I would say our church, like, we never stopped having churches, church services on each Sunday and each weekly Bible studies and all of that, because we continue to live our lives, we continue to go to work every day, and life has become, like, now things are moving back up again, like that. Now we are used to, we stop now for a few days, and then we continue again in our lives because of any casualties, I would say. But so you just don't know what happens the next day. That's why I would say I'm also the unorganized person, because I'm not used to plan things, because you never know what happens the next day.
Thank you so much, Sally. And thank you for everyone writing these questions. We've got lots of great questions. We will try to get through as many as we can. If you're still thinking about a question, please just write it down and we'll come and collect it. But just before we get to questions, we have people online. It's great to see you. Thank you for joining us online. And we've got a few comments. And we've got a comment here saying, standing with you, Dawood and Sally. Inspired by Active Hope message. So inspiring what we're hearing this morning, and the fact that lots of people have said they're very grateful to be able to join Greenbelt online. So let's give a good wave to everyone at home. We're with you. Thank you for being with us, and we'll see you here next year, hopefully. Okay, so some questions here, Dawood. There's a couple of questions around what your relationship is like with the Israeli Defense Forces, with settlers. When you talk about not hating, talking about love, so how do you develop a sense of compassion for the Israeli occupiers?
The thing is, you know, there are Israelis who know what is really happening and don't care. There are people who just close their eyes. And there are also people who do not know. So it's very important, like, to open people's eyes, to let them see the truth. And the truth is sometimes painful. It's very important to challenge the people with their way of life. That doesn't mean that we should have hatred in our hearts. On the contrary, we do not hate, but we have to stand up for justice. We have to be sometimes angry for achieving justice. Sometimes we have, to go through tough educating materials, you know, something like for people to understand. So all of that is done without hatred. But the thing is, we need people to open their eyes and ears to hear and to listen, to understand what is done in the name of security, what is done against other people in the name of occupation and security.
Thank you. There's sort of on the same theme, there's a question here. What practical advice would you give in how not to be a victim? What does it look like not to be a victim?
Well, you know, we are, again, we are all humans, and many times we feel we fall in this victimhood. I come late because of the checkpoint. You know, we practiced that when we studied. Why you came to the lecture late? Because there was a checkpoint, you know. So, but sometimes it's getting like, let us say, an easy excuse, you know, not to do something against that, but to wait. You know, it's not my fault. It's the fault of my occupier. It's my fault. The road is unclean because of the occupation. You know, sometimes it's like being like feeling that you are not doing anything. I always remember the story when this disabled person was sitting, and then Peter and John, I think Peter came to him and he said, I have no money, no geld, no gold and silver to give to you, but in the name of God, he took his hand and he stood up. And this is exactly like not to fall in the victim mentality, not to stay in that
Daoud,
circle.
We've lost audio at the moment.
Because it won't help you.
I don't know if you can hear me.
On the contrary, it will destroy you. But refusing to be a victim is a challenging thing. It's like give you the power, like the strength to stand up and act differently. Like to say, I am able to make a difference even in a difficult situation.
Read it out for us.
Refusing to be a victim. This is very important for us today, generally speaking, but more specifically for us Palestinians.
Again, we had a little bit of technical problems. I couldn't hear everything, but I think some people were able to read that. Thank you for the answer. Another question here. So I'm part of a group that has formed a friendship network with the municipality of Dar Salah, east of Bethlehem. Most homes have been in Area C, but they have recently had apartments demolished in Area B. And this appears to be a very worrying development. Can you confirm that since early July, the Israelis have changed their rules and that are now able to do this in Area A, house demolitions? Are you able to give us an insight?
You know, I would say in this situation, there are no rules to follow. I mean, anything can happen anywhere, any houses were also being demolished in refugee camps in the northern side of the West Bank. So there are no rules, you know, anything can be justified. So the issue of like A, B, and C is not existing anymore. Like we are under occupation, wherever we are in area, in what they call it, Area A or Area B or Area C, the same story.
Thank you. Thank you. Just a few questions about the Tent of Nations. First one, very easy question, and this might surprise because I think I know the answer to this question. But how old is the oldest volunteer you've ever had at the Tent of Nations?
It was in March. We had a lady from the Netherlands, Riet, her name. And we celebrated her 92 years old, like birthday, at the farm, at the Tent of Nations. Yeah. And she was very active. She lived in a cave, by the way, and she was very active, like helping on the farm.
So basically, no excuse. No excuse. And thank you for that. So here's a question. At the Tent of Nations and in Bethlehem, how do people get their food? How do they get their provisions?
Yeah, well, you know, like, of course, like, you know, shops are open, you know. We still can get like food, you know, vegetables, fruits from the market. Many things are we are buying from the from Israel, but sometimes if things are restricted, you know, like things won't get into the West Bank, and also like many of the goods, like fruits and vegetables, are not reaching us from the north, from like Jenin area, from Nablus area. Sometimes we have restrictions. Like a few weeks ago, we had no diesel and no like gas, because it's all, you know, we have to buy through Israel, and we do not have our own economy. You know, we are like dependent on the Israeli economy, and anytime anything might happen and the tap might be closed, and we have no water, we have no electricity. So everything is depending on them. And this is really very, very difficult and very sad for us, not being independent.
I mean, that question was a practical question about how people are coping. This one's another question. There is much in our faith that encourages us to be more childlike. And we know that God came to us as a child and lived in an occupied territory. How are the children in your communities coping? And what can we do to support the children?
I would say, you know, like our children are traumatized, are growing up in a very difficult political reality. I mean, not only our children, we are traumatized. I mean, we live under occupation. I was born under occupation, so it's very difficult to tell my children what is the meaning of freedom, because never felt it. For the children, the problem is that, you know, they pass checkpoints with their parents. For example, they see on a daily basis how their parents are being humiliated at the checkpoint. When they start talking about that, we tell them, oh, you don't understand. We let them not talk about their frustration, their trauma. And this is also dangerous. So everything stays inside. And that is why, you know, one of the things that we are doing at the Ten of Nations is the children's summer camp, to bring about 50 kids from Bethlehem area, from refugee camps. By the way, this year we were not able to do the summer camp in July because of our situation. Hopefully next year again. The idea is like to bring those children, also like including Christians and Muslims, also from the three refugee camps that are in Bethlehem, to get them out of their environment, to try to connect them with the land, with the environment. Because I feel nature is a healing place. And we try always through different kinds of activities like mosaic, music, theater, to let the children discover their talents. The thing is, if the children discovers their talents, they will focus on their positives, and they will believe in themselves that they are able to shape their future by themselves with their own hands. So what we are asking you to do is, there are many summer camps happening, you know, from the church, from other organizations in and around Bethlehem. So it is very important to have like people who are specialized in trauma and try to, you know, to help those children overcome their fear, their doubt, you know, the feeling down, not to be encouraged, not to believe in themselves. So those are very important things, because we believe the children is the foundation of the future. And if we are facing now traumatized children who are not capable of standing up and continuing the journey, so we are in trouble. So that's why it's very important to treat that. It's very important to work on that. And it's very important, if you all have ideas for us that we are able to do, you are welcome to share with us.
Thank you. So if people do have any ideas, please You can see me, see the people that have volunteered at the Tent Nations afterwards if you've got any ideas, and get them to you. I'm gonna have three more questions for you, Dawood. And the first of those is, what is your message to the Israeli government and to Hamas?
Well, you know, like for us, you know, from the beginning, we say, you know, like, God created us all as children of God. We are all children of God, and we are not allowed to act violently against one another. You know, so it's very important to say, you know, in our situation, there is no military solution to our situation today. You know, the only way is to act non-violently, is to act out of love, you know, to show the other that things are possible, that we are able to make a difference, and they, you know, we cannot like remove one another from that equation. You know, very important is to think collectively and to have the international community standing up for justice and not being on one side against the other side, but to help finding a solution, a fair solution for both sides, to live in peace and dignity, because it's about the future of the children, the future of the new generation. You know, suffering and suffering and suffering will create more suffering, but also will create more trauma, will create more bitterness, will create more hatred, and the journey of violence will continue. So there is a way for a better future based on justice, peace based on justice. And we want you, we want the international community to stand up for justice and say its word.
Thank you. We have Christian friends who believe Israel is in the right in this war. It makes us very sad and angry. Do you have any suggestions how we can respond to this?
Well, you know, sometimes it's really sad when religions are being misused for political purposes. This is not faith. When we talk about faith or being a Christian, the table is big enough to accept everybody. You know, it's not like one person has the better right than the other. And this was the early discussion with the disciples, like Peter and Paul, you know. But at the end, we are in Jesus, we are a new creation. So we are all belong to be children of God. And trying like to politicize, you know, like using politics in religion is a big mistake, because God is the God of justice. God is not being on one side against the other side. God does not like suffering of people. And that is why we have to see things differently. And to those people who believe so, I would like to invite them to read the Bible in its text and context and understand it also from the perspectives of the poor, from the perspective of the marginalized, for the people, from the perspective of the people that have no voice.
I've left this question to be the last question because it's quite a moving question, and I want us all to hear what is behind this question. We, in this country, just to give you a bit of context, Dawood, you may probably aware, but we are seeing that there is certain laws being used to try and stop people protesting about Palestine. and protesting for justice in Palestine. And for some people, that has meant that their conscience and their commitment to freedom for Palestinians has led them to be arrested and to face charges and to be in prison. And this is a question from somebody here in our gathering today. My partner wanted to be here today, but unfortunately couldn't because she's in prison for protesting for Palestine. In this time, she has struggled with managing to not be overcome with fear and anger. What is a mantra or prayer you use to help you choose love, hope, and kindness when you feel hopeless so that I can pass that message on?
Well, you know, we have to learn from Apostle Paul, who wrote also his letters, you know, some of the letters to encourage the church, to encourage the people from the prison. So he was in prison, but he was able to empower the people. So so I would say, like, it's a tough situation that this is happening, of course. But sometimes I would say, like, being on the side of justice is costly, and we appreciate that the people that are ready to pay this price, you know. But again, you know, even in a situation like that, we feel, of course, we are in solidarity with those people, but we feel that those people are a symbol of hope for us who are struggling outside. So they can empower us while they are in that situation.
I'm just going to ask now, and if nobody puts their hand up, that's fine, but I just wonder if the person that asked that question wanted to share with us the name of the person who is in prison so that we can hold that person in prayer, then I want to give that opportunity now. Excellent. Sorry, what's the name of?
It's Charlotte.
Charlotte, okay. Please, please hold Charlotte in your prayers at this time as she is in prison. And bless you for being here, and please send Dawood's message and send our message as well in love, and our prayers go with Charlotte. Thank you. Dawood, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and I will see you next month as long as I can get back. Thank you for everything. You're always an inspiration. The way in which you have for years continued to be a Christian witness under the evils of occupation, refusing to be a victim, refusing to hate, refusing to be an enemy. You always bring your struggle and you wrap it up with the Bible and the story of Jesus. And that is why you are so inspiring. Our prayers are with you, with your family, with the struggle as it continues. And we just one thing we want to say is, I said to the people online, we would see you here next year. Let's pray that we can see you here on the stage next year with us, because we would love to see you in person.
Thank you so much on this very long journey for justice. Thank you so much. We appreciate that. Wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.